Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past and present. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land in which our food is grown.
This is a pre-recorded interview about a series of workshops exploring the cultural significance of herbs. These workshops took place last weekend at the Brunswick Multicultural Festival, so please note they have already happened, but we still hope you enjoy the conversation.
My name's Anne Stanley, and today my guest is Shani Shafria. Welcome back to Local Food Connections, Shani.
Thank you, Anne. It's lovely to be back.
Shani was on the show maybe about a year ago, or maybe
a bit more even, I think. Yeah, even more. It's been a while.
Yep. Shani's a therapeutic horticulturalist who's very interested in the connections between gardening, culture and community well-being and individual well-being, I'm sure. Her business is called Wellgrown. You can find it at wellgrown.com.au. Shani will be leading workshops at the Brunswick Multicultural Festival held by Brunswick Neighbourhood House. In the workshops, she'll be exploring the deep significance of various herbs, cultural significance of various herbs. Knowing the stories that these plants carry can connect us more deeply to the place we're in, places we came from, our culture and each other. So, Shani, just tell us about the workshops a little bit, what sort of things you'll talk about.
So, like you mentioned, the multicultural festival is happening, starting very shortly. And it's a celebration of the diverse community around the neighbourhood house and in Brunswick. And there's actually a few workshops, some cooking workshops as well, which was really beautiful. And I'll be running sort of a combination of seed sowing workshop in the context of herbs and the significance that they have in our cultural identity. In the gardening kind of community, we all know that sort of herbs are your starter plants. Many people are recommended to start with herbs. They're easy to grow. They can grow in pots. But I find that beyond that, they're a fantastic group of plants that we can enjoy year-round. And I find that different herbs have, when we speak of culinary uses and growing food, different herbs will hold so much cultural significance and will be sort of the essence of cooking. And between plants and food, I think those are some of the things that connect deeply to our soul and really signify what home is. And with such a diverse immigrant community, being able to grow and cook the food that you grew up with, the food that your parents, grandparents cooked, is beautiful and very, I don't know, there's magic in there.
I think there is. There's a whole lot of meaning in there that's much broader than just the dish that you're eating.
Absolutely. And because they have such significant, like distinct smells and flavors that they impart into the cooking, it's enough to sometimes that scent is enough to just trigger, like, I remember coming home to this smell. Sometimes it'll be, I don't know, when you have like onion and garlic frying in olive oil or something like that. It's that smell. It transports you back to younger ages, to cooking, to comfort. So I think herbs in the culinary sense hold a lot of that. And there's herbs that are being used in different ways, of course, in different ways in different cuisines. And then we have different cultivars. Today we'll be looking at some seasonal appropriate seeds to sow, which are parsley, basil, dill, and oregano. And it was kind of hard to choose which herbs to go with. Luckily, the season did dictate my choices, so I didn't have to sit there and go, how do I choose? Because they're also important to different cultures. And I have my own cultural background, which is diverse within itself because of the culture, the multicultural area that I grew up in, but still very far from other places. So I know my knowledge. I'm excited. What I love about community events is I'm excited to hear from other people who will be participating in the workshops about the different cultivars, the different types. You know, if it's basil, is it sweet basil? Is it Thai basil? There's, you know, they're very different in their flavor profile. And, you know, dill will, for me, immediately I'll think of sort of Russian salads and things like that,
Pickles.
or pickles, exactly. Or it brings up in a different sense, it brings up that sort of very Mediterranean Greek cuisine that also celebrates that in, you know, the herbs in such a fresh, beautiful way. So I'm interested to hear what other people will bring from their cultures, because that's part of that exchange is why I work in community.
I come from Scotland, and I think the only herb that my mother and grandmother would have used was parsley. Pretty sure. I mean, you wouldn't call, they would use some spices like maybe just pepper, but you know, it's very plain cuisine. But they used to put a lot of parsley in the soups, and I think parsley was probably something they could grow there. What did you were in a Mediterranean climate,
Middle Eastern, Mediterranean. So
so what did you have?
definitely parsley, very strong, and oregano, and sort of the more local za'atar,
Is that, yeah.
which is the wild oregano. So that's definitely in there. But also having a mixed background, so I have Eastern European heritage as well. Dill is definitely part of that. So
When you say you're going to have other people participating, are you basically going to show the people in the workshop this is how you plant parsley? And then are you going to encourage sort of discussion about how people have used that
yes, I'm
herb?
going to yeah, I'm going to combine a practical seed sowing skill. We'll have some punnets and soil and herbs to choose from. So people can take home punnets with herbs to start to care for at home. And as we're doing that, and connecting around this sort of lovely, relaxed activity, we'll be discussing the significance of those herbs, how they flavor our food, how they connect us culturally to our heritage, as well as the medicinal properties of herbs. They're such concentrated flavor bombs, and they're packed with, you know, antioxidants and vitamins and anti-inflammatories, and you know, we make medicine out of them as well. Parsley is a well-known diuretic, and oregano is, you know, fantastic in aiding respiratory system or menstrual support. So yeah, they're really beneficial and such an easy thing to take home. I like when we do workshops in these contexts to make something super accessible. So even if you go home and you only have a pot or a windowsill or a small balcony, you can still tend to a small herb and grow it. And if you're growing something like an oregano, then you have a perennial, then now you can keep revisiting. And yeah, so.
Can you have you got any particular stories about any particular herb that you can tell us, you know, going back in time?
I don't know if I have a particular story. I just find I just, in my experience working with, I work in different places in community organizations. So I come across many people from many different backgrounds. And I just know that everyone has their own personal little story that comes from connections, comes from that sort of scent, that emotional trigger of something. And whether it's a tabbouleh that's packed with parsley, or if it's basil and they have either, again, that sort of more Italian background, whether it's a pesto or it being placed, a single leaf of basil in the bottle of passata once a year when the big day happens, they have, a single leaf will have such a memory packed into the whole event. Or if it's, fragrance through Thai curry, or so I know that just I like hearing those. There are a ton of little stories rather than I think maybe a big story. They're such a regular occurrence in our kitchens mostly.
And would you use that? Would you use those that kind of soul connection that people have with the use of these herbs in your therapeutic practice?
Oh, absolutely.
Could you describe
Absolutely.
that a little bit?
I find in, well, when I work, depending on the group that I'm running, because I mostly do group work, when I work with groups, I try to sort of find commonalities is to start with and connect everyone around a garden, maybe starting from like the solid base of healthy soil and kind of build up from that. But then, after we get comfortable, I try and sort of find what connection everyone has to gardening, and whether it was through family or if it's just the fact that there's a flower that they really love that's just outside at the neighbor's front yard or something like that. And from there, it quite easily, I find it quite easy to sort of link that emotional connection to whether it's sight, smell, or touch to plants, and encourage from there participants to find their way of gardening and their way of healing and tending to their own well-being through those practices, through gardening, through picking herbs. Or I also always push people to go to community gardens because I think that is just, they are invaluable in, especially today,
And
and
especially in
valuable
an area
places.
like, sorry, goodness, I won't interrupt. You go on. Why especially today?
We feel so disconnected from each other as a society. And I'm talking from, living in Melbourne, living in Nam, and that's where I know now. So I see around me a lot of disconnect in community, and the systems that we inherited socially have kept us to our own homes, and we work from home now, and all of these paths just keep us very solitude, so in the solitude. And community gardens have a fantastic power in bringing people together, regardless of their background, ability, age, and whether they have space at home or not. Some people have big gardens and still go to community gardens to connect, whereas others will have a tiny balcony, maybe with a pot, but will have that extension of this gorgeous third place that is the community garden, where they get to go home with big bunches of leaves that they've picked because there's always such abundance in those places, and everyone is so generous. So I can gush about community gardens a lot. I just think that's, they have a special power. And usually free or very low cost, so it's not prohibitive in that way. And we need more of that in our life, definitely.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. And if you go to 3CR Local Food Connections, you'll find all of our podcasts, including our podcast of the conversation we had with Shani about therapeutic horticulture a good, possibly 18 months ago.
I think Welcome to Country is a very dangerous concept and initiative. I really don't know where Welcome to Country even merged from. I know that I don't think it was obviously an Aboriginal initiative. I think obviously governments had introduced that as they were pacifying our flag of resistance. You know, the idealism that lies behind that obviously is so that white people can feel a sense that they're more guests and they've got a right of ownership and to be here. If we're going to continuously welcome them to country, what that does, it rectitudes the fact of the moral racism issues in which they perpetrate against our people. Because how can we be talking about all these other issues and then compromise a hypocrisy in our own selves to welcome these murderers and these slave traders, and this barbaric sense of what they've done to occupy Australia on one hand and welcome them on the other?
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
If you've just joined us, this is a pre-recorded interview on Local Food Connections. A quick reminder that the workshops being discussed, focusing on the cultural significance of herbs, were held last week at the Brunswick Multicultural Festival. We're sharing the discussion anyway and hope you enjoy it.
But are there any herbs that you feel particularly connected to, even that are doing well in your garden at the moment?
Not doing the best in my garden at the moment because it's bolting like crazy, but I can't get past parsley. There's probably a reason why it's everywhere, and it's both flavor-wise, health-wise, it's as well as I love a herb that really doesn't need me to do anything. It'll just keep coming back year after year through the cracks in the concrete in any spot it finds. So I have such abundance and I get to be bring big bunches to friends and neighbours.
I think I agree with you. I think parsley is a great thing to grow and it's so good for you. It's so dark and green and full of nutrients.
Any salad I make usually will have, unless I'm making a different style of cuisine, pretty much every salad will have parsley chopped through it. Mm-hmm. And mint is another one. I use it in tea. I use it in cooking. I love lots and lots of greens in my cooking, so they will often find their way into salads when I make a spanakopita, you know. Mm-hmm. And dill, of course. I don't know if I can choose, Anne.
How do you use dill? Dill's one of my favourites.
Mm-hmm.
How do you use dill? How do you use it?
I use it in pickles, like you mentioned before. I love adding it to salads as well. And if I ever make something similar to a spanakopita or any kind of like pastry parcels with lots and lots of greens inside, dill is really great in that. I also like making like a herb omelette. So chop up anything that I have, whether it's parsley, coriander, dill, the tops of fennel and, you know, anything that's sort of sprouting and having, I'll chop it all up, mix through with an egg and make a nice omelette full of flavour and health. There's so much life in that green, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I might make that tonight, actually. Tell us more about what people might find at the Brunswick Festival if they go down there today.
Yes. So there are a couple of food trucks that are going to be there, which is a little bit exciting because who doesn't love a good food truck? And we're also going to have a cooking workshop, a Thai cooking workshop. I'm going to make some, I'm going to try and pronounce it. I really hope I do it justice. It's Khanom Krok, which are Thai snacks. So that's going to be, and there's going to be a vegan pierogi cooking demonstration and a decorate your own Greek vase workshop, and like a kids craft workshop, and African dancing djembe. And Irish traditional music is going to be so much. It's such a diverse and interesting community.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach regularly at, I have been for the past few months regularly, regular classes, gardening classes. And I always see such a diversity of people in that house participating in different classes, workshops. So it's been quite nice to see the community come together in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And the garden there is also quite good. And there's also that food forest, the work park food forest outside the house, which is, it's also a great space to visit and walk through and if we're lucky, we're going to have a few of the mulberries still there.
Yeah.
They get picked as soon as they ripen, the mulberries, but there's a beautiful big tree there.
An old
I
tree.
just gave up a neighborhood secret, maybe, for when
Oh
to
yeah.
find the good mulberries.
Yeah, there'll be none by the time everyone the festival
Yeah,
starts.
I hunt there every week, so I only find a handful. So I'm guessing more people do the same, which is great. I love a good public source of food.
Just around here, I'm in Warrandyte. There's if anyone's in Warrandyte, if you go out and walk along the streets, you'll find a lot of locusts just coming into ripeness.
Yes. I've been pinching petals off the feijoa and waiting for those to ripen later in well, it'll be next year, but later in the summer, end of summer.
Why are you taking the petals off? Is this something
Oh,
I
they're
don't know?
delicious.
Oh, okay.
Yes, when the flowers sort of reach, not when they're young, they're not so sweet, but when the flowers sort of start, the petals start folding on themselves and being a bit more droopy, they have quite a bit of sugary kind of goodness in there, and they're quite flavoursome. So I'm careful not to do too many. So, we do get to enjoy fruit, but I'll try and pick a few petals to snack on those.
I want to ask you more about your own background. I want to ask you how much of your food growing up was Middle Eastern and how much was Eastern European?
Like I said, I grew up in a very mixed cultural kind of area, or Israel in general is very mixed culturally. So there were definitely a lot of influences from friends, neighbors, environment, as well as the Eastern European that my parents sort of got from their parents. I think with a lot of Israeli cuisine, it's really very much of the place. So vegetables are a huge component of our food. Fresh vegetables, there's always salad. We always eat salads. It's full of fresh produce all the time because it's such a fertile and beautiful land. And that would be mixed with either. I think because my dad is the was always the main cook at home, he did his own sort of take on Eastern European traditions. So he would make like a main dish, but then there's always like a rice and salad or something like that to go with that. But as I grew up, surrounded by friends from Syrian background, Moroccan background, Yemen, those different Middle Eastern and Mediterranean sort of environment, then, well, they're not exactly Mediterranean, but definitely Middle Eastern. I definitely took that into my cooking as well. So I make things that are very much of the place, that are inspired by those various traditions, the Palestinian traditions, the local, the because I grew up in the north, Lebanese, southern Lebanese. So they're definitely, for me, they're a big part of the culture and the identity that I grew up with. So again, always making salads, making chickpea and herbs and eggplant stews and tomato, baking things like burek or spanakopita. So I've definitely taken on that and continue with that sort of, and keep it here. When I'm very lucky because I'm in Preston, I have the market and I have this community that was here for years of Greek background. So those are very easy to, those food items and those produce items are very easy to come by.
It's funny to list when you listed those foods. I mean, and they're so, 100 years ago in Australia, they would have been so exotic. And now these are the normal dishes that many people in Australia are eating. The ratatouille, the hummus, the tabbouleh, all of that stuff is just part of Australian cuisine really now.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it is quite a mixed community here. There's also a big Vietnamese community. So I'm actually cooking a lot more of those dishes, Chinese, Malaysian, Vietnamese inspired or Southeast Asian as well, that I've learned while being here. And because there is, I get to go to the market, which I'm very happy to do, and explore what's there and then see how I can play with it. There's everything I could wish for, all the spices, all the herbs, vegetables that I've never seen before growing up in Israel. Yeah. So it's very, very lucky here with the produce that we have, the vegetables, and the fact that even though it can get a bit crazy at times, the climate here allows me to grow different things in my garden and in gardens that I'm at. So just recently in Brunswick, actually, someone brought in and started growing collard greens, which I've never come across. Collard greens, yeah. So I've heard of them from, I think, it's a North American, but I think the South used them a lot.
It appears in a lot of their stories Is it a brassica or is it something?
It is a brassica. And it's sort of, think of nice big broccoli leaves. It's similar to that. Mm-hmm. Nice big leaves. And yeah, so I'm always learning something new, a new variety, a new vegetable that I haven't seen before.
Did you see the film Make Hummus Not War?
No, that sounds like I should.
Oh, this was a great film. I can't remember where I saw it now, but you might be able to find it somewhere online. Make Hummus Not War, and the filmmaker went around, I think mainly Israel, and just spoke. You know, the Israelis were saying this is our food, and the Lebanese were saying no, we invented it, and not like the way we do it, and all this. So it was it was good, and the idea was that food has got the potential to unite us in a way that war completely devastates us and disengages us probably for generations.
And that's true. I have in one of the groups that I run, there's a women's group, and there's a lot of women that come from that region as well. And I love to have the opportunity to connect to women that I wouldn't otherwise get a chance to meet and discuss. And we connect over plants and food that, despite my different cultural background, I grew up, I have a couple of women from the south of Lebanon. We grew up, I don't know, a few kilometers away from each other. And we can run a border, but the plants are just going to be there, and the climate is going to be there. And, you know, even if we can't cross the fence. So we've had so much connection over food and flavor and herbs and sharing recipes. So, yeah, it is. It does have the power. And being kind of in the middle of these different countries, that you do see then those flavors come through, especially in Israel, where there are people who do have Libyan and Assyrian and all of these Iranian backgrounds. Those things come in and you will find different types of falafel or hummus or those dishes that are very specific to their region, but are quite common across the Arab world and across the Mediterranean and the Middle East.
And I love how, because herbs are so rampant, you know, they really go weedy, don't they? And which is why they're so common in everybody's culture. Love the idea of them just nipping straight across the border. Like there's no way you could really, or you could spray them all, I suppose, but why would you?
That would be awful. exactly. They are quite weedy. And I do love that about herbs. They're, especially when they are in the right climate, and plants in general, but when they're in the right soil and the right climate, they just do their thing. And if we treat them well and we pick them consciously, then we do talk a lot about in the groups about women talking about their grandmothers going to the mountains and just picking herbs. So you didn't even grow them in your garden necessarily, you know. These are things that were wild in our environment, and we slowly brought them into our homes and made them part of our garden. But if you're living closer to untouched nature, then you can just go and forage, which we're bringing back to urban culture in the last decade or two, probably in a more conscious and concentrated way, more mainstream. But it's basically how we survived all of these thousands of years. More, of course, of the species, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay, that's a nice place to leave it. So thank you for joining us again today.
Oh, my pleasure.
My name is Anne Stanley, and my guest was Shanisha Freer.
If you'd like to find out more about Shanee's work in therapeutic horticulture, go to wellgrown.com.au. And if you want to find out about events similar to the ones that Shanee was leading at the Brunswick Multicultural Festival, please go to localfoodconnect.org.au.
Thanks, Shanee. Until next week, love the land you're on. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.